Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, January the 12th. And man, what a wintry day! I mean, we're not snowing like it's up in the Northeast or in the Midwest or anything like that. But it sure feels chilly here in North Texas today, at least for us. You know, when it's in the high 40s for us, or even in the mid 40s for us, that's a little chilly. And I think that when you add to that the fact that it's this little light rain, you know, it just, you know, I don't want to sound like, you guys up north are probably going to think, oh, what a sissy he is. No. I understand that this is nothing compared to what you're having up there, like in Kansas City, where they're having that football game. But anyway, I guess this is January in Dallas, and we're okay with that. We're okay with that. We need a little break because it's going to be 100 degrees in July, believe me, July and August, and we can use a break. We can use a break, a winter break. I have a post at the American Thinker today talking about President Bolsonaro in Brazil, who is off to a great start. You know, he made a lot of promises during the campaign. I think a lot of Brazilians probably reacted to those promises the same way that most people react to political promises or campaign promises. You know, you're always a little skeptical. Well, so far he seems to be living up to them. And one of the most interesting ones is where he pulled Brazil out of this UN migration, they did. And it's one of these UN resolutions, or one of these international resolutions that countries sign. They're completely non-binding. So I don't even know why they sign them. Well, why would you sign an agreement? Why will you enter into an agreement or sign something that is completely non-binding? I mean, it's just people just want to feel good, I guess. They want to sign these things. It's like the Paris Climate Accord. It's non-binding. You can't do anything to anybody who doesn't live up to it or breaks the rules. And as a result of that, very few countries are living up to the Paris Accords. In fact, I don't think any of them are. None of the countries are complying with the Paris Climate Change Accords. And yet they're all signing them. And when Trump pulled the United States out of the so-called agreement, they were all screaming, what a terrible thing that is. What a terrible thing. What? The countries that are in the agreement are not living up to it. So what a joke that is. But anyway, Bolsonaro is off to a good start. And I think he is piece by piece changing much of the legacy of Lula. And I think that's a good thing. That's a very good thing for the future of Brazil. I have a post coming out Sunday morning about gasoline shortages in Mexico. And this is really creating a big problem for President López Obrador, who's only been president for about 45 days. This is a real problem that he's having down there. People are getting pretty angry. You know, Mexico is a country that has never really had gasoline shortages. If anything, for a long, long time, gasoline in Mexico was extremely cheap. I mean, almost to the point that they were giving it away for nothing. People didn't really appreciate how cheap it was. In recent years, it's become the price is more competitive. Let's say with the United States. So it's they're paying about what we pay here. Of course, in Mexico, they consume or they purchase liters of gasoline. We purchase gallons. But when you do the calculation, it's about the same. It may be a little cheaper in Texas than in Mexico, but the average is probably pretty close to both countries are probably paying about the same price. But the problem in Mexico is that these pipelines that bring the gasoline to the big cities or the trucks that bring the gasoline, they're being stolen. I mean, there is sabotage on the pipelines. They break the pipelines, and then, of course, they steal the gasoline. They literally break them and steal the gasoline, which is amazing. And they're stealing the trucks. And this has become a real crime problem in Mexico. It's become, people are very furious about this because, you know, they're not accustomed to, you know, making lines for gasoline in Mexico, just like we were not accustomed, those of you who may remember in the late 70s, early 80s, when we had gas lines. We were not accustomed to that. So, you know, we were accustomed to driving down to the gas station, and there were four of them, and you picked the one that was the cheapest gas. Well, that's, you know, that's kind of the way it is in Mexico, even though they don't have as many gas stations as we have. So Mexicans are not accustomed to this, and there's outrage. People are very angry, and they're directing the anger, of course, at the president of the country, López Obrador. And he's trying. I mean, I'm not knocking the guy. He's trying, and they're trying. They've sent out the army and the police to protect these pipelines and to protect the trucks. But, you know, the question that I'm asking in this article that I have coming out Sunday morning, the question I'm asking is, who's doing this? Because this does not look to me like a bunch of kids, you know, who decided to go out and pull a prank on a Friday night. I mean, this looks to me like a very organized, disciplined operation where you have criminal elements who know how to break these pipes, how to take the oil out, how to steal these trucks. I mean, this looks to me like a major criminal operation. And who's behind it? I don't know. I mean, it's up in the air. I guess you could guess maybe the cartels are behind it. You never know. You never know who's really behind it. But there is something going on, and it's pretty bad. And if it doesn't get addressed very quickly, it's going to create real problems for President López Obrador, who so far has been spending a lot of time of his very brief presidency on things that he didn't think he would be involved in. Number one, I don't think he was planning to be dealing with caravans. That's not something he was looking forward to, but that's what he apparently will have to do here, because there's another caravan coming, and we just learned that Mexico is going to be tightening up their border with Guatemala. We'll see what happens when that caravan gets there. And then the other problem is the one of the gasoline, and this is a real irritating problem. I tell you, I mean, friends of mine in Mexico and people that we talk to on the phone, everybody's furious about this because, again, they're not used to this. They're not used to waiting in line to buy gasoline or, having a rationing of gasoline or whatever. So there's a lot of pressure building in Mexico, a lot of pressure growing against the López Obrador administration to do something about this and to do something about it fast, to go after these criminal elements. And what's going to happen, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on this kind of stuff. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpiz. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information. Click on that, and you'll be able to find out where he's playing around town on any particular day of the week. Well, we have a new person running for president, Julian Castro, who was mayor of San Antonio not long ago. And also, he was in the Obama cabinet. He's running for president. My guess is that there's going to be about 10 officially running here pretty soon. By, let's say, the fall, there will be about 10. I think what all of these guys are doing, whether it's Castro, whether it's the lady, this lady in Hawaii who is going to be announcing, I guess, very soon, or even Elizabeth Warren, I think a lot of these people are angling for the vice presidency. Because I think most of them, at least I believe that it's going to be Joe Biden. That's who I think the nominee is going to be. I think he's the best one, or the one best position for that nomination. So I think it's going to be Joe Biden, and then, of course, he will pick one of these candidates, whether it's Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren or this lady in Hawaii or perhaps Beto or perhaps Castro. You never know. One of these people will be selected. But, of course, it doesn't really matter who the Democrats nominate, because what usually happens in a reelection is that it's all about the man seeking reelection. It's not really about the person running against him. It's all about the man seeking reelection. The only exception to what I just said in recent memory was in 1992, when then President Bush was defeated for reelection, not really by Bill Clinton, but more by Ross Perot, who divided the Republican vote. And so far, I cannot tell you whether President Trump is going to be reelected. My hunch is he is going to be reelected. I think he will be. But again, if President Trump's reelection chances look very bad, let's say in the fall or a year from now, then yes, I think you will see more of these people stay in. But it takes a lot of money to run for president. It costs a lot of money. And I just don't know that a lot of them can hang around too long. I mean, you can go to Iowa for a while. That's not an expensive place necessarily to campaign because it's small and you can get around by car and all of that. But nevertheless, once you get out of Iowa and you get into New Hampshire and, you know, California, which is going to be very expensive, then I think, you know, that's when whatever the expression is, the tire meets the road or whatever the expression is, I think you'll see many of these guys simply run out of money pretty quickly. Well, it was on this day in 1963 that the Beatles released their second single, Please Please Me, and that went on to become their number one song, or their first number one song. It was their second release. Love Me Do was the first one. This one, Please Please Me, became an instant smash, and in a way, it really began the entire Beatle experience, because later, after Please Please Me, they had She Loves You, and then, of course, came I Want to Hold Your Hand, and then came the Ed Sullivan Show. So Please Please Me, 56 years ago today, was the song that really got the Beatle experience going. And it was an amazing experience. For the next 7 years, they dominated the radio, dominated the charts. They were clearly the biggest force in music around the world. Just absolutely, absolutely, absolutely amazing. Please Please Me. It's a good song, too. It's a very good song. On this day in 1969, Super Bowl III was played, and what made that Super Bowl special is that Joe Namath and the Jets defeated the Colts, and those were the days of the AFL versus the NFL, and everybody thought the Colts were going to win. Everybody thought the Colts were going to wipe out the Jets, actually. I remember some of the predictions. I was living in Milwaukee at the time, and I remember there was a sportscaster there. I think it was Channel 8. I don't remember the gentleman's name. I can see his face, but I don't remember his name. And he was forecasting 36-0. I'll never forget this. The Saturday night before the Super Bowl, he said it's going to be Colts 36, Jets nothing. He thought it was going to be a wipeout. And I understand why. I understand why. The Colts had an amazing team. The Jets were part of the younger AFL. The AFL at the time did not have the credibility that obviously the NFL had. So most of the teams in the AFL were probably not good enough to play in the NFL, but, you know, you had some, like the Jets, the Chiefs, the Raiders. Those teams were pretty good. And I think that's what happened, you know, that the experts sort of got caught by surprise. They didn't realize how good the Jets were. And on that particular day, the score was 16-7, but the game was not even that close. 16-7 would suggest that it was a close game. Not really. Not really. It was 16-0 deep in the fourth quarter, and the Colts finally scored in the fourth quarter. But it was a one-sided game, the exact opposite of what everybody had predicted. So Super Bowl number three, the amazing thing for me about this game, it's that it's 50 years ago, and I can still remember sitting down with my brother and my dad watching this game in the living room. Oh, my gosh, 50 years ago have passed since Super Bowl III. Well, we're going to say happy number 68 to Rush Limbaugh. You know, Rush, I don't know of anybody who can do what he does. And forget, just put the politics aside for a second and just think of what he does every week. I mean, this is a guy who's on the radio 3 hours a day, 15 hours a week. He has been doing this for 30-plus years. He gets better. I mean, it's amazing. He doesn't go back. He gets better. And I don't know how much longer he's going to do it. I mean, he's 68 years old. You would think at some point he's going to slow down. But, man, I mean, he's just he's the best at this type of broadcast. Again, put the politics aside, just as a radio host, I don't know of anybody who can do it better. So happy birthday, Rush Limbaugh. Happy number 68. Well, I say go Cowboys tonight. I hope they win. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.